Welcome everyone.
Right here. Time to start a new book. Book of Kings. Book of Kings, verse 1. So when you get to Shul the Shabbos and you open to the Haftorah, you'll get a surprise. The first chapter in the Book of Kings is this week's Haftorah. So I think I mentioned to you that I had a Rebbe, a Holocaust survivor from Europe, and he told me from his Rebbe that he had a tradition that if you're learning something and you find that it relates to something that you're doing currently, or that you see, it's a sign that it's like Hashem is giving you a smile or a nod or a. And so I thought, you know, of all times that we pick to start a new book, we're starting the Book of Kings, and this is the week where it's the Haftorah. So it's a good sign of that. Everybody takes time off from a busy Monday to learn a little Torah. It's a great thing. So this is where David HaMelech is getting older, and the Book of Kings is really going to describe the Jewish kings are from the house of David. He is the prototype of the Book of Kings. Shaul HaMelech, his dynasty didn't last. His kingship started, we weren't ready for it. When you try to do something when you're not ready for it, as many times it doesn't succeed because it's not the proper time. It's not the proper... Shaul HaMelech started off as the first king, and as we had learned from Shmuel before, that the way that we went about it wasn't correct. We wanted to imitate the non-Jews, and we wanted a king like all the Gentiles. And Shaul HaMelech himself made certain mistakes with Amalek. He didn't destroy Amalek, and he didn't admit his mistakes. And we even mentioned the Chazal, though, that with that said, he was one of the all-time greats. I mean, he went into battle for the Jewish people, not like kings that like to protect themselves. He was more concerned about the people. And in certain ways, he was too good. And we mentioned sometimes when people, one of the great things about David HaMelech was that he was humble. And when people make mistakes, it humbles them. They're aware of their mistakes. And we do better when we're aware that we can make mistakes. When we think that we don't make mistakes, that's when we're in real trouble. And so some people comment about Shaul that he was like too good. He just didn't, he wasn't aware of his mistakes. And it was also interesting to us how he had a certain kind of like, today we'd call it paranoia or schizophrenia or a certain... The word the Tanakh was a ruach ra, like an evil spirit. I don't know what a bad spirit came over him. But we have to recognize that people are human, and sometimes something happens to them where it's not really them. That wasn't him. Shaul was a tzaddik. But at times, something came over him, and he acted like he was out to get, you know, he's got to kill David. They're out to get him. He acted paranoid. And it's not excusing that. He was punished... the fact that he had to die in battle and that they hung him up on the wall. I think I mentioned to you they actually have excavated and found that temple to the idols that was mentioned in the Book of Tanakh where they hung him up. But you can go and actually see that. You don't see it, you know, the idol. I think it was Dagon was the name of it in the. The fact that you can separate a person and their emotions or something that comes over them that's not intrinsically part of them, they need to get help. And so, but Shaul didn't get help, and Hashem sent that spirit upon him to do the things that he did. But that was Shaul. Now we're getting to David HaMelech in his old age. And partially the events that are going to happen are explained by what was going on with David HaMelech. So let's see. There are some differences in style, we'll notice, between this book and the Book of Shmuel. It's written by two different authors, by the way. Right? Shmuel, of course, at least the first part of the book was written by Shmuel HaNavi. This book was written by Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah the prophet. It was many years later. And so, for example, here, whenever it mentions David, it says King David. It's written like with a respect, Shmuel HaMelech anointed David when he was the shepherd boy, and so he also wrote of him as a person, whereas Yirmiyahu, going back to the dynasty, always referred to him as the king. But you can see it also, it's a little more distant from the, you can see it's written from a different perspective.
But how many years later would Yirmiyahu would be the the end of the first chapter. Mm-hmm.
Right, that's right.
So it's at least 500 years old.
I'd have to look. I get confused with the years. So, HaMelech David Zaken, and the king David HaMelech got old. Now, what scares us is, you know, what's old? He died when he was 70, so that doesn't leave us much hope, you know. So they say, you know what it means he's old? He's Baal Bayamim. He went through a lot. That's what makes people old. And even more so, they say he had trouble with his kids. There's nothing makes a person old like having trouble with the kind of trouble that, you know, he had with his family and his own household. One of the things, if you ever notice, they always show pictures of presidents before they start, and then once they're into it. And it's amazing how they age in front of your eyes. Have you ever, Obama and Bush, I once saw somebody, you know, show the pictures. And what it is that the responsibility of running a nation and the pressures it puts on it, it literally turns them gray. I think so. I mean, I think it's... So this is what happened with David HaMelech, that the pressures and of the things that he went through, that aged him prematurely. But even without that, in those times, 70 wasn't the spring chicken. It was, you know, he was up there. We also had in the end of the book that, in the previous book, that there was a plague, and he felt it was his fault, that Hashem sent the plague, and... he almost saw, like, the plague came all the way to Yerushalayim, and he saw the plague. And many people say that the fright that he had from that was what caused the shaking, or what caused the fear. So HaMelech David Zaken, he came of his age, b'kesu b'gadim, and they tried to cover him with clothing, b'lo yichamlo, and it didn't warm him. Today, I think there's a name for it. Do they have a doctor knows it? Isn't there a name when people older people shake?
The shivers,
yeah, okay.
That old expression was
fake
vitis disease.
Is that what they called it?
Yes. Yeah.
The,
it attacks the nervous system, fake vitis disease.
So the thing about it is that the Torah wouldn't record it if it was a purely physical disease that anybody could have. And somebody like David HaMelech, if he got this disease or if he got this sickness, there had to be a reason for it. And so the rabbis searched around, and with their... we have an idea that the closer a person is to Hashem, the more exacting Hashem is with them. That's a hard concept. I'm not even sure we can go into it, but there is a verse that says that those that are... when you look at a diamond, like any blemish, when something has to be... a very fine instrument has to be very exact. And so when a person is the leader of the nation and the standard bearer for all eternity, so Hashem is very exacting. So there's a tradition that when David wanted to show Shaul HaMelech that he could have killed him, what he did was, if you remember, going way back, everything really... See, that's the perspective we have from learning Shmuel, was that when he was in the... Shaul, if you remember, was very modest, and we learned that he didn't go to the restroom in front of other people. And so he went to a cave, and he picked the cave. The governor and his men were sitting there, armed to the teeth, to use the restroom. And David had the ability to defeat his enemy. And he could have easily killed Shaul, and he didn't do that. That speaks to David's greatness, but he wanted to send Shaul a message. So what he did was, and when Shaul took off his garments, he sliced off a corner. And so apparently the fact that he was willing to do that, he insulted the clothing, so to speak. And so therefore, in his old age, the clothing didn't warm him. That's the statement of the rabbis. Which is hard, you know. Maybe there would have been another way for him to do that. And in fact, it didn't work. If you remember, what Shaul's general claimed was that's not from David's sword. It just got stuck on a thorn bush. Why didn't it? Apparently, David could have done it in another way. And it's we have to show respect to a king. And so apparently, by making a hole, and maybe it was the wrong part of his garment to make a hole in. I don't know. Who knows what? Maybe he got a draft. It was just not respectful in the way in which he did it. But some people say that's why he was punished over here, that the garments didn't warm him. We're not used to really the idea of a king or of a leader. But when a leader, one of the reasons that Russia fell apart, you know, and the communists came into power, which was was because the Tsar was in the last few years of the war, his son was sick. He was a hemophiliac, and there were a lot of crazy stuff going on in his house, and the country wasn't running because they were so involved in it. But they had this guy Rasputin that came in, and the whole country, Russia's huge country, just without an effective leader, just fell to pieces. Because you can't, when you have a country that's run by one person, and every decision has to be done by one person, and that one person is not there, nobody makes the decision, because if you make the wrong decision, the Tsar will have your head. So the same thing is true if the country's run by David HaMelech, and he's the king, and you can't do anything without the king, and the king is so sick, we're going to see shortly that he was in bed, and he was sick, and he didn't know what was going on around him. And we're going to see that, you know, perhaps he wasn't, sometimes people fail to make plans for the next leader. That's a very difficult thing. You know, there are Hasidic groups that suffer from that, where the previous leader didn't set up the next. It's a very difficult thing to do, because you have to decide between family members and...
They only have a son.
Or if they don't have a son. Well, there's two situations today that Satmar... has two sons, and so the two are fighting it out, and the father liked them both. So what do you do, right? And then Lubavitch had no sons, and so both of them are having problems because the succession wasn't decided. It's not easy deciding succession, and so we're going to see over here that it was a worrisome time that he got sick, and they tried to warm him. Evidently, they tried other things as well. They tried blankets, they tried fires, they tried all kinds of things, and it didn't work.
But he had already said that Shlomo was going to be king.
Not so clear. So let's see. Verse 2. V'yomer lo avadav. So his servant said, Yivakshu ladoni ha-melech nar basula. So they said, we need to get the king a very strong and effective nurse that's going to take care of him. Now, David HaMelech was not a small person. I assume he was very big and strong and a warrior. And so if you ever try to move an elderly person, you know, to get them out of bed and lift them up and help them, you need to have a lot of vigor and energy. David's wives were probably older at this point. He had married most of them. He'd reached the maximum. Early, in other words, even a king is not supposed to have more than, it's 18 wives, and he had reached that early on, and so most of his wives were at least middle-aged, and they were no longer really capable of picking him up and being an effective nursemaid. That's part of it, that he needed an effective nurse. Number two, the one who would be in charge of him would control the government, because what happens, many people, I think it was it Roosevelt that his wife ran the country for a while?
Wilson.
That was Woodrow Wilson, thank you. Yeah. Many times, the one who controls the access to the aging leader, you know, they put their ear and they said, the king says this. So this nurse would be, in effect, telling people what the king said, or the king can see you now, or he can't see you now. And this was a very sensitive and important position. So you needed somebody very strong. You needed somebody who was completely trustworthy. You also needed somebody who was righteous. You know, somebody who was, David HaMelech was a prophet and was the singer of Tehillim. He couldn't just have any, you know, kind of immoral person. So a special kind of person would be needed. Besides that, there is physically, men are warmed when they have a female who's with them. The Nazis, Yimach Shemo, did experiments with the pilots that were shot down. I don't know why I'm getting to history today, but the pilots that were shot down over the waters would be left in frozen waters, and they'd pick them up after they'd been bobbing around for a long time, and they'd be half dead. And so they wanted to figure out how to rewarm them. And so they would have women like warmers, try to warm them up. There's something physical about a man's body that he warms up when he has. Therefore, this was on that time. This was the best. This what they needed to do, what they thought would cure the king. Again, to us, you know, we're a little prudish. It doesn't sound nice, but if they believed that it would be an effective way to keep the king warm by having female company that would take care of him, so that's what they were looking for. Now there is a problem here, and that is you're normally not allowed to touch somebody of the opposite gender, or especially if they're not a wife. So what do you do? So some cases that, you know, if it's purely medical, it's one thing, but over here, this is somebody that would be in close contact with the king. So the Gemara talks about this. Very interesting. The sages, when they discussed the idea of what was to be done, so the idea was that maybe David should marry her. That would work. If he married her and was his wife, there'd be nothing inappropriate. That would solve at least the problem. But David had the maximum number of wives. So they asked the Sanhedrin, can we find a way to, well, the Torah, can't go against the Torah. The Torah says you can't have more than 18. It says the king can't have too many wives, so what should you do? So there was a suggestion that maybe he should divorce one of his wives and then take Avishag, who's the one who was picked. And that would solve the problem. So it said that the Sanhedrin didn't, and at this point in his life, what did he need all 18 for? I mean, you know, would he notice the difference? It says that they wouldn't let him because, you know, the person doesn't divorce their wife. It doesn't, it's a, the expression of the Gemara is that we find that we don't take divorce lightly, even if there's no physical contact, even if they're old, that there's a marriage bond there. We just don't ignore that. And so the sages, the Sanhedrin convened, and they permitted him to be alone with this nursemaid for the sake of trying to save his life and being able to run the government. Yeah.
So there's a very funny story. What was the mayor of Atlanta, an elderly man, before
Hartsfield?
Yes, Hartsfield. He was in his like 70s or something, and he divorced his wife. He had been married to her for years. So one of the newspaper people was interviewing him, and they said to him, "Mayor, how come, you know, after all these years, you would divorce your wife?" And you know what his answer was? "Who wants to be married to an old woman?" That was it. Plain and simple, that was his comment.
Really? I'd heard that line. I thought it was a joke. I didn't realize somebody actually said that.
It's honest truth. He said this to a reporter, and it was quoted in the paper.
So, but it's discussed in the Gemara. This wouldn't be normally done, but to save his life, and obviously she was willing to do this. We're going to see later that she was a candidate to be queen, this lady, Avishag, that she was she would control the access to the king. And in fact, after David HaMelech passed away, the princes wanted to have her, to court her, to see whether she could become a royal or to become a, because they felt that she was a quality person. It wasn't just a nurse. Again, it was a very important. So she took care of him. And we're going to see in a minute it didn't help, but at least in theory they tried. Verse 3, Vevakshu Nara Yafa, this is what they saw. So they went to search and they looked for a Nara Yafa called Vol Yisrael. Usually, what did it mean Yafa, like beautiful? What difference does it make? I mean, if she was a good nurse, she was a good... most people say beautiful meant that she was a righteous person or a pious... The same way by Sarah, that we're told, and she's described as beautiful. When a person is old, we don't think of them as beauty, even if they are beautiful, but it's the inner beauty that radiates. It's the beauty that counts. And so that's what's described here. And but you must say, they looked for a candidate, and they found her. As Abishag, a Shunamis, he was Abishag. Shunamis was the name of a place, Shunam. I don't know where that is today, but some place called Shunam. They brought her to the king. Verse 4, now, but maybe she wasn't as the king didn't like the way she looked, or she wasn't qualified. No, Shvenar Yafam Ad Ma'od, she was beautiful, very beautiful. Ad Ma'od is like top, top, you know. But the king didn't know. It was almost, I mean, that tells you how sick he was, that he didn't even notice. Like he didn't, didn't help.
Yeah. Would the princess have been able to marry her despite the fact that she had been touched by David? Or
we'll talk about it. It's coming up. Okay. It's coming up later. We'll have to see. So meanwhile, the king is getting old, and so there's talk of succession. Who's going to run the country? And it seems like David HaMelech is so sick that nothing helps. They can't even. We know when people reach that stage in life, when they're in nursing homes, and it's hard to communicate with them. It's hard to, can they still think straight? Or Adoni ben Chagis misnasi. So he had a son, and his son's name was Adoniyo ben Chagis. It gives us the mother's name. We mentioned this in our review of the book of Shmuel, how the mothers play a role. This one said misnasi lemani emloch. He said he was arrogant because he said, "I will be the king." That's always a one of the things about we learned about David that what suited him was he was humble, and Shaul HaMelech was humble. When you get a leader that's not humble, you're in big trouble. It's the he was arrogant, and he said, "I'm going to be the king." He felt that he was groomed for the role. Why did he feel he would be king? Well, he was. It seems like he was the oldest son. He was about 40 years old, and we'll see that Avshalom had been killed, and apparently the other surviving, there were one or two other children who were no longer in the picture, and so he felt that he was he would be the natural one to succeed. Either he did this because he wanted to become the king, or because he was arrogant. He saw himself as a royal. The Aslo Rebbe made himself a chariot and a rider. Now, it's one thing to have a chariot ride, to have a nice car. Like, a lot of people like nice cars. If you like speed, you have a nice car. But to have the runners running in front and say, "Here comes the king," that's a little bit much. The Chamishim Ishrotzi, he had 50 runners just to run in front and say, "Here comes the king." Yes, yes. Now, where was the problem over here? Was he really bad? So it's really interesting. It's kind of scary here. The problem apparently was with the father. The father never rebuked him. From the way it says it, it implied that had David rebuked him, that might have helped. Who knows? But why for the verse 6, for the atzavu avi miyom, his father never rebuked him. Now, David felt, we had this before, that he, because of his own sins, he felt reluctant to blame his children, like to say things to them. But the Jewish guilt trip, why'd you do it? Right? Apparently, a parent is supposed to say to a kid, if you're doing something wrong, you're supposed to say to him, "Why'd you do it?" I mean, you can ask. You might say, So his father should have asked him, if his father had said something to him, "Why are you acting like you're going to be king? What do you need the runners for?" The Gemara says an interesting thing. When they had runners, it was a profession to be a runner in front of the royal people. And they used to have operations so that they would be fast runners. They ran barefoot so that they would run, and they would apparently they heated the bottom of their feet so that they would see. If you're going to run and you're going to step, when you run, you step on stones and other things, and so they would deaden the nerves in their feet so that they wouldn't feel as they were running. And it also says that they took a medication where they got rid of their spleen or they lightened themselves. It's interesting. I don't know exactly what it was. But,
they had the spleens removed.
Yeah, and the... apparently, today when people try out for a swim team or they
that probably has to do with oxygenation of blood. Today they try and give you extra blood for more oxygen for the runners, so the spleen may have something to do with it. Spleen provides blood. And blood carries oxygen, so that's the connection.
Mm-hmm. So the ancient Greek athletes did that, and so the runners
today,
they... Well, the athletes today, that's one of those things, too.
Yeah, today they use drugs. And
they also hyperoxygenate the blood for hikes within the mountains or in Mexico or something like that.
Oh, I see.
And the spiritual, or the, I guess, metaphysical connection with the blood, I think it's supposed to relate to the emotion of joy.
Hmm.
So if there's some kind of connection. And blood is also related to our family.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. But apparently people took this job to be runners for the king and walk in front of him. But Singh never said, Begambhu Tov. Now, besides that, sometimes people can want to be the king and brag that they're going to be the king, but if they don't look like the king, you're not going to fit the job. But he fit the bill. Hu Tov Tar Meod. He was very handsome. You have to look the job. You have to have the kind of look that people meet you and you give it. And he had the right also Yolda Achrei Avshalom. So he was in Avshalom's mold. So some people say that he had the arrogance of Avshalom, although he didn't rebel against his father. It could be that once Avshalom was out of the picture, he felt surely he would be the heir apparent. And we're going to see that he was quite crafty, or he, again, his plans didn't work, and it was in an evil way, in a certain sense, because he didn't, it's not like he asked his father what his father wanted. He saw that his father was sick, it was time for him to seize power. So, if a person wants power, you have to have the people of authority on your side. You have to know who pulls the, so who is the number one person in the government is the Minister of Defense. You have him on your side. If the army's behind you, then you'll be able to seize power. So he went after Yoav. Verse 7. So, again, so he prepared himself to be king. So first of all, he gave himself the trappings of a king. He had the runners, and so the people would view him as a candidate. And now he speaks, and he wins over the army. He had a talk with Yoav ben Tsruya. Now, in the Jewish country, it's not enough to have the army. You have to have the priests on your side. You got to have both sides taken care of. It's spiritual and physical, right? You know, if you have the army and not Hashem. So he spoke to the Kohen also. So he got everything taken. He took care of everything. He looked the part. He had the runners. He had the chariots. And he spoke to Yoav, and he spoke to Avyasar HaKohen, Viazra, and they were open to that he should rule. Why would they be open to that? So, first of all, it could be that not everybody knew that there was a prophecy that Shlomo would be the king. It's a little bit dangerous to be thought of as the future king, especially when you have a lot of brothers. And being part of the royals, there's all this intrigue that surrounds the royals. And it's not good for a child to grow up, you know, thinking that he's going to be the king and that he's going to be bigger than his brothers. And so it could be that they didn't tell everybody exactly who and what. So maybe they didn't know. It also could be that Shlomo would be king one day, but he's I think he was 13 years old, and this Adonio was 40. And so he looked the part. Shlomo, it wasn't so clear that he was ready yet to be king. And so if you wanted to have a strong country, you would pick a leader that you assumed would be ready to rule right away, not to have a young person who was not yet. And, you know, if you read Kohelis, it seems like Shlomo also for a little while experimented. You know, he said, I tried this, I tried that, I tried the wealth, I tried thought I would gather as much wealth as I could. And, you know, so who knows, you know, maybe it was like people at that point, later on, people saw who he was. But when he was younger, maybe they didn't, it wasn't so clear. Now, Yoav was on the out, if you remember, because he had killed David HaMelech's, he had killed Avshalom against David HaMelech's report. He therefore, it would make sense that he would want to be on the in with the next leader, because that would guarantee him that he would survive. And Avyasar also was on the out as a Kohen, that had to do with the... So people on the out, they would make up with the new leadership. Verse 8. Now, how do we know that he wasn't planning on being democratic about this? Adonis. I mean, so far, what he didn't do anything wrong. What he did wrong, though, was that he didn't speak to everybody. He didn't speak to Tzaddik, and he didn't speak to Ben Eliyada, and he didn't speak to Nathan the Navi, and he didn't speak to Shimi Reha Gibor Meshach. David had his inner council, if you remember, his council of three. He had some top people, but the inner sanctum, the real crowd, were not on his side. Those he thought would oppose him, he just didn't. Not everybody agreed. It wasn't unanimous that he was fit.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound like his sister was on his side either.
Which one?
Zeruiah.
Oh, Zeruiah. That's right. That's right. That was Yoav's sister. Yeah. Is that okay? Yeah. You don't know. So let's see. Verse 9. Now, in order to be king, so he had part of the government with him. So sometimes the thing to do is to be the first one to declare that you're the candidate. In other words, anyone else would have to go against him if they wanted to be. So he decided he would declare himself the king first. And that would be his advantage, because then anybody else would have to pick a fight with him. And so he had a plan to declare himself king while his father was sick and in bed and not capable of really getting involved. And this way he would preempt anybody else. So he decided to make a party. Again, it wasn't, again, the Jewish people, you don't just make a party. You bring offerings to Hashem. You make a Thanksgiving party. So he went to the well-known stone there that was Eitzlein. Rogav Yikris Kolach Ibnei HaMelech. He called all of his brothers. Kolan She Yehuda, and he called all of the big people, all of the important people, the men of Yehuda, Abdi HaMelech. So he made sure that all the big people, this was the party that no one would want to miss. You know, the royal prince calls the party, everyone's going to be there. But that's nothing. But certain people were not on the guest list. The people who would oppose him. Right? If you're going to declare yourself king, you don't want to have anybody who's going to rain on your party, who's going to tell you, no, wait, not so simple. So he didn't invite them. He didn't invite Shlomo. He didn't invite Nathan HaNavi, and he didn't invite the Giborim, David HaMelech's. David HaMelech's Giborim we had before, they were loyal to him. They would not, it's not appropriate for a son to make his own decision without consulting the king. And if the king is still alive and he hasn't said anything, so you can't just ignore him. He's not dead yet. He's still here. So they wouldn't go along with anything unless they were sure it was David HaMelech's will.
Yes. I think I remember the answer. Benaiah is that person that he brought into his...
Yes. He was the one, I think later on in the times of Shlomo, we're going to see he's one of the top people. He was the Ben Yoyada, the one that the Sephardic sage is named after, the Ben Ish Chai. 12. The Adelechia Yasa, the Eitza. So, I'm sorry, I skipped the line. 11. The Yomar Nosin El Basheva. So it's so interesting. In politics, it's like anything else. Things have to be done in the right way to be effective. And even, we had this before with David. David HaMelech, even though he was anointed to be king, there's a way to do it. There's a way, and so he went a way to go about it. And nothing is guaranteed in life. Even when Hashem makes promises, those promises assume we will do things in a logical way. Mm-hmm. But we have the ability to blow it. In other words, even a person that's given an opportunity, if you don't do what you're supposed to do, then the opportunity is lost. So while Shlomo probably would have been king, but if things didn't happen the right way, they could change. There's an interesting idea that we all know that every person has their beshert. They have their soulmate that's out there that's dedicated for them. But apparently, if a person isn't careful, someone else can scoop them up. There's that idea that's brought down that things could change if you don't. In other words, you might say, well, if a person has their soulmate, so why do I need to give them presents and court them and do what I have? It's preordained. It's only preordained if you take the right steps. It's not going to, nothing's going to happen unless you God helps those that helps themselves. In other words, things are preordained when we take the right efforts. If we don't, if it's preordained that we'll be wealthy, it's not going to happen if you don't work hard, you don't get the education, you know, it's not, you can't just, it's the things only happen when you put your effort in and then they happen. And so over here, a very interesting thing. The prophet, Nathan, knew that Hashem wanted Shlomo to rule. But even with that, he had to go, nobody knows 100% what the final plan is. We're not God. We really don't understand how things happen, why they happen. Things don't always happen exactly the way we envision them. It's just, that's the way life is. And so, if you want something to happen, you have to take the proper steps. So we see the prophet over here uses strategy. Strategy. You know, God, everything happens with strategy. So he knew, if you want to reach David, and you want to effectively make sure that David would, when a person is old, when they're really not well, they don't like to be bothered. There are very few moments where they can keep their eyes open and they to get up and to talk. Everything is an effort for a person when they're older. Nobody here would know that, but that's the, so it's much harder, and so you really need to motivate somebody that has only a few waking moments, and it takes so much energy to get out of bed in the morning. To motivate them, you really need to a strong motivation. Okay.
Okay. Why would he not have consulted with the Kohanim? Why did he just, was he so arrogant that he just took it upon himself?
The son, you mean?
Yeah.
Apparently. Mm-hmm. Apparently he thought that he would have to take the steps to make it happen. Because his father never said to him, you know, who made you the king? Who said you? So he just assumed it was coming to him. He just assumed it was his right. And
the ones that came before him were gone.
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
Everybody was out of the way.
Yeah. Absalom was gone, and you know, all oldest of the brothers, so I mean, he figured, okay, you know,
yeah,
this is my moment.
People say, you know, Yoav was a smart person, and the other people as well, Abiezer. So he wasn't a bad person. In other words, if he was a candidate, somebody that, you know, was close in the running to be king, he definitely had good qualities, but he just wasn't meant to be. It was Shlomo was, we're going to see that really he wasn't fit to be king, but it wouldn't be so easy for us to know. So the prophet Nathan, he knew that he saw the situation. We've got this new king. We've got Adoniyahu who's going to set himself up. He saw right away what was going on. And he has Yoav on his side. And he's making this big party. It's coming up real soon. And he understood that he was going to announce himself as king. And how do you stop it? What are you going to do? So he knew that he needed to get David HaMelech. The only one who could solve this would be David HaMelech himself. And he would have to get him to get the energy to get up and move. So his first strategy was to go to Bathsheba, because he knew that she would be passionate about this, which Bathsheba was David HaMelech's favorite wife. And also she was the mother of Shlomo. And we're going to see that it wasn't clear. When you think about it, David HaMelech, his whole life, had people who claimed he was a sinner. And if David HaMelech was a sinner and shouldn't have married Bathsheba, then Shlomo was not meant to be king. And it would be very easy for some future king to say that Shlomo was tainted and Bathsheba was tainted for sinning with David. And so if there would be some other line that would come into power, Bathsheba and Shlomo would be on the out. And they could be in big trouble, as we're going to see. So she would be passionate about this. The Medrash says that when her first child died, Bathsheba's first child that she had with David died, so David said he still wanted to marry her and that he made a mistake and, you know, he shouldn't have forced her when she was still engaged to Uriah, whatever, you know, we talked about that. But she said, well, Hashem is angry with us, doesn't want this to happen, and what guarantee do we have that... So it says that David HaMelech swore to her that if he would, she would marry him, that the future children would be viable and that one of them would sit on the throne. And so she had the promises of David that this would happen. So now she's the one who he would go to. That's one thing. Number two, when one person tells you something, that's only one person. When more than one tells you, that's when it hits you. You know, when you get two calls, That's when you you get two calls, then already you get excited. And so his plan was, Nelson didn't want to be just one, he wanted to multiply the effect. So he said, first, Bathsheba, you go in there, you wake him up, Nelson, Bathsheba, aim Shlomo. Now, who's Bathsheba? Just in case you forgot, she's Shlomo's mother. She said, hello, Shamati. So now, he also, it's very interesting how he says this. He says it like a done deal. He wants to get her on. Maybe she would be complacent. There's no time for complacency. He said, you know what I heard? Alo shamati ki malach Adoniyo ben Chagis. She said, I heard that we got a new king. Now, where to hear it? It hadn't even been announced yet. Well, prophets hear even before it happens. But he wanted to get, I think he wanted to get her excited, to wake her. Everybody, this was a moment of danger, of real danger, that Shlomo would not be declared the king, and we'd have the wrong leader. And as we know, it have an arrogant leader with the runners, and that, who knows what would have happened to the Jewish people if Adoniyo got this job. And so this was very important.
So is there a possibility that says that Shlomo will reign after you?
No. There isn't. There's a tradition that it was told, but it wasn't, at this point it wasn't so clear. So he says, hello, Shemati Kimala. I said, this is what I heard. I heard Adoniyo has done deal. And you might think if David HaMelech had approved this, you're out of luck. No. Adonenu David lo yada. David doesn't know anything about it. 12. Now, we've got to be smart over here. We've got to, please, let's be smart. You know, don't get emotional. We have only a few moments to act. We got to do this right. So let's take advice. Ayetna Eitza. Let's figure this thing out. You know, she knew the king better than almost anybody knew the king. So she would be the one. And it's also interesting how he goes to her because he wants advice. You're the queen. Tell me how we can get David HaMelech over here. Umalti es nafshe. And this is going to save you because you're in great danger. Es nefesh b'nei Shlomo and the soul of your son Shlomo. So verse 13, l'chiyu bo el HaMelech. You go to the king, David. V'omarte lav, and you tell him. Haloata Adoni HaMelech nishbati l'masecha. Didn't you promise me? Leimor ki Shlomo b'nei Chiyim l'chachre. He told her, he made a promise to her that Shlomo would rule. V'hu yeshiv al kiseh, and you said he would sit on the throne. U'madu HaMelech Adoniyo. Why is, what's going on here? Something's happened, you know. You ask, you know, read him, you know, tell David what's going on here. You promised. And why is Adoniyo king? Now, that alone, that's one effect. But two, while you're speaking to him, verse 14, Hine odcha medaber sham imamel, while you're speaking to the king, ani yavo achrayich. I'll jump in. So I'll come along at the same time, and if I jump in, umulesi et divrecha, when you have two people, then people will listen. Sometimes no matter what you have to say, if it's just you, they just don't take your advice because you're just one person. But if you get a dual approach, you get two people to approach from both sides. You got the prophet, you got the wife, both of them will come at the same time, and you use the shock effect. You say, you know, you promised, and I hear this other thing is kink, let's try it. So let's see what happens. V'tavo Bathsheba el HaMelech. So she comes to the king in his private room. HaMelech zakein mayod. King was very old, very, very tired, very out of things. Avishag shenu mashuras HaMelech. And Avishag is there, and she's taking care of him. First, 17. The Tikva Bathsheba. So she bows down. V'tishachu l'melech v'yomer. HaMelech. And apparently the king was at least noticed her. That's a good sign. He said, Malach, what's up? Malach. Apparently also not, people didn't come uncalled. It was clear that, you know, she came and she bowed down and it was like that something was up. So the king said, what's up? Malach, what's doing? 17. V'tamalo Adoniyata nishpati b'shem l'checha. So she gets right to the punchline. Sometimes you got to get to the punchline right away. Especially if he only had a few moments, you know, like where he opened his eyes and he said, Bashem, he said, you, my master, swore to me, Kishlomo b'nei Kimloch. Again, we take our oaths very seriously. You promised that the reign would be my son Shlomo. But who Yoshua Kisen, he would sit on the throne. And we'll have to leave this for tomorrow, next week. verse 18. We'll have to find out what happens. But so again, it's on the Haftorah. We'll get a chance at a head start on that.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.